Giannini was with Prosecutor Yervas for 15 minutes. She wanted to know what charges the prosecutor intended to bring against Salander, but she soon realized that Yervas was not yet sure of her plan.
"Right now I'll settle for charges of aggravated assault and attempted murder. I refer to the fact that Salander hit her father with an axe. I take it that you will plead self-defense."
"Maybe."
"To be honest with you, Niedermann is my priority at the moment."
"I understand."
"I've been in touch with the Prosecutor General. Discussions are ongoing as to whether to combine all the charges against your client under the jurisdiction of a prosecutor in Stockholm and tie them in with what happened here."
"I assumed that the case would be handled in Stockholm," Giannini said.
"Fine, but I need an opportunity to question the girl. When can we do that?"
"I have a report from her doctor, Anders Jonasson. He says that Salander won't be in a condition to participate in an interview for several days yet. Apart from her injuries, she's on powerful painkillers."
"I received a similar report, and as you no doubt realise, this is frustrating. I repeat that my priority is Niedermann. Your client says that she doesn't know where he's hiding."
"She doesn't know Niedermann at all. She happened to identify him and track him down to Gosseberger, to Zalichenko's farm."
"We'll meet again as soon as your client is strong enough to be interviewed," Yervas said.
Gulbeg had a bunch of flowers in his hand when he got into the elevator at Sahlgrenska Hospital at the same time as a short-haired woman in a dark jacket. He held the elevator door open for her and let her go first to the reception desk on the ward.
"My name is Annika Giannini. I'm a lawyer and I'd like to see my client again, Lisbeth Salander."
Gulbeg turned his head very slowly and looked in surprise at the woman. He glanced down at her briefcase as the nurse checked Giannini's ID and consulted a list.
"Room 12. The nurse said. "Thank you, I know the way."
She walked off down the corridor.
"May I help you?"
"Thank you, yes. I'd like to leave these flowers for Carl Axel Bodine."
"He's not allowed visitors."
"I know, I just want to leave the flowers."
"We'll take care of them."
Gulbeg had brought the flowers with him mainly as an excuse. He wanted to get an idea of how the ward was laid out. He thanked the nurse and followed the sign to the staircase. On the way he passed Zalichenko's door. Room 14, according to Jonas Sandberg. He waited in the stairwell. Through a glass pane in the door he saw the nurse take the bouquet into Zalichenko's room. When she returned to her station, Gulbeg pushed open the door to room 14 and stepped quickly inside.
"Good morning, Alexander," he said.
Zalichenko looked up in surprise at his unannounced visitor.
"I thought you'd be dead by now," he said.
"Not quite yet."
"What do you want?"
"What do you think?"
Gulbeg pulled up a chair and sat down.
"Probably to see me dead."
"Well, that's gratitude for you. How could you be so fucking stupid? We give you a whole new life, and you wind up here."
If Zalichenko could have laughed, he would have. In his opinion, the Swedish security police were amateurs. That applied to Gulbeg and equally to Björk, not to mention that complete idiot Bjurman.
"Once again we have to haul you out of the furnace."
The expression did not sit well with Zalichenko, who thought back to his gasoline bomb attack.
"Spare me the lectures. Just get me out of this mess."
"That's what I wanted to discuss with you."
Gulbeg put his briefcase on his lap, took out a notebook and turned to a blank page. Then he gave Zalichenko a long, searching look.
"There's one thing I'm curious about. Were you really going to betray us after all we've done for you?"
"What do you think?"
"It depends how crazy you are."
"Don't call me crazy. I'm a survivor. I do what I have to do to survive."
Gulbeg shook his head.
"No, Alexander. You do what you do because you're evil and rotten. You wanted a message from the section. I'm here to deliver it. We're not going to lift a finger to help you this time."
All of a sudden, Zalichenko looked uncertain. He studied Gulbeg, trying to figure out if this was some puzzling bluff.
"You don't have a choice," he said.
"There's always a choice," Gulbeg said.
"I'm going to..."
"You're not going to do anything at all."
Gulbeg took a deep breath, unzipped the outside pocket of his case, and pulled out a 9mm Smith & Wesson with a gold-plated butt. and the revolver was a present he had received from British intelligence 25 years earlier as a reward for an invaluable piece of information. The name of a clerical officer at MI5 who in good Philby style was working for the Russians. Zalachenko looked astonished. Then he burst out laughing.
"And what are you going to do with that? Shoot me? You'll spend the rest of your miserable life in prison."
"I don't think so."
Zalachenko was suddenly very unsure whether Gulberg was bluffing.
"There will be a scandal of enormous proportions."
"Again, I don't think so. There'll be a few headlines, but in a week nobody will even remember the name Zalachenko."
Zalachenko's eyes narrowed.
"You motherfucker,"
Gulberg said then, with such coldness in his voice that Zalachenko froze. Gulberg squeezed the trigger and put the bullet right in the centre of Zalachenko's forehead, just as the patient was starting to swing his prosthesis over the edge of the bed. Zalachenko was thrown back onto the pillow. His good leg kicked 4-5 times before he was still. Gulberg saw a red, flower-shaped splatter on the wall behind the bed. He became aware that his ears were ringing after the shot, and he rubbed his left one with his free hand. Then he stood up, put the muzzle to Zalachenko's temple, and squeezed the trigger twice. He wanted to be sure this time that the bastard really was dead.